Welcome to Activate Yourself with Gita Sidhu Rob, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Gita Sidhu Rob.
Welcome to Activate Yourself, and my name is Gita Sidhu Rob, and we're doing this as a slightly different version today because I have my good friend actually sitting with me in my, well, should we call it a studio?
Yes, let's call it the studio.
We're calling this the studio. It's the Sunflower Studio because, you know, for obvious reasons. And what we're going to do is have a chat about what it is that led Elizabeth to the work that she's doing now. So it's very similar to Activate Yourself. Normally, we're just going to be in the same room, in the same space, in the same Sunflower Studio. Mm-hmm. Next time I say that, somebody will know what the heck I mean.
Yeah.
So you had a really big job, right?
I did.
You had a big corporate job, and you flew around the world, and you were doing this when the kids were little, and you were doing all the pain associated with that. Mm-hmm. And then you stopped.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
So shall I just go back a bit and tell you what I did first, and then we can talk about
please.
Why? So my career has been 25 years in HR, three children who are now 21, 18 and 8, as
right.
we talk today. And yes, I was traveling a lot. I was raising three kids. Life was hectic and life was crazy. But my big thing really was around, in my HR career, how we can drive cultures so people can thrive in their best self. And I had a particular passion around supporting women in the workplace by the very nature that I am one, which is handy.
Always helpful.
Always helpful. And I was raising three kids and having a big career, and I wanted both.
Yeah.
And so towards the end of my corporate
career. As do many women.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And then towards the end of my corporate career, I was global head of wellbeing for a big American public company and on their global DEI committee. And I learned through the strategic work I did there that there are things we can really be doing to make the workplace a better place for inclusion, for women, for everybody to thrive in their best self. And it was at that point I left corporate and set up my company, Ludo.
So when you're saying do better, are you saying that they could be more supportive? Are you saying that they could be more, you know, because one of the biggest issues we have is that, what do they call that female drain, the way women are leaving the workplace?
I can't think of a special term for
they always come up with some great bloody terms to explain mm-hmm. why our lives just don't work and we need more and they're not fucking working. And so it'd be interesting. Yeah. So wasn't that, because was it not hard? I was going to say, what's the hardest thing to give up? And then in my brain, I had that conversation with myself. Was it not hard to give up that salary?
Really hard, really hard. And I fully underestimated what that would mean. So having had 25 years of a salary every month, I decided in my wisdom, I'm going to leave corporate and set up my own company. So I resigned from my job with this vision, and I was on a 6-month notice period. And I resigned in November 19. So anyone who can do the maths quickly realizes my notice period ended in April 2020 when the world went into a global pandemic.
Oh my God, do you know, I've never realized that.
And I just thought, what have I done? I've given up all my safety, everything that's going to keep us thriving through this pandemic. And so that was a real shock and a curveball, and of course meant far greater challenges than I ever imagined of setting up my own company. But I did it. I just think I underestimated the time it would take, the challenges, the mental burden, the emotional burden. I had one doing A-levels, one doing GCSE, so two kids at crucial exam stage. A four-year-old at that point that just wanted to sit under the table.
you know, but they don't tell you this. Can we please point out that you should never have children 2 years apart? Not in the United Kingdom school system. If you're in any form of British school system, don't do it.
It's true.
Because I had that too. I had one lot doing A-levels and one lot doing O-levels. And then I had one doing his university.
Yeah.
I mean, horrendous. Do not do it. Count and separate them. 3 years minimum, please, or your life is over.
Yes. Or a year if you can face it. I don't encourage that either.
No, that's an accident waiting to happen.
So it just all took longer than I ever imagined.
Now, were you the sole breadwinner?
Yes.
Oh, heck. Mm-hmm. How long were you the sole breadwinner in this process?
So my girls, I was married, had my daughters, my son was from a second relationship. And so I solo parent, not single parent. And I'm always really specific about singling them out because I do think those are two different lives. I think single parenting, wow, all credit. You women are incredible. I solo parented, which meant I did get a bit of time off. You know, I get the odd weekend off and they used to go to their dad's, well, not in COVID, but every other weekend. COVID was slightly more complicated, but we're not here to talk about that. So yes, I did get some time off, but I do think those days when you're on your own, running a house, feeding those kids, trying to grow a company. Yeah, well, it's horrendous. It was absolutely the toughest time ever in that first 18 months of COVID. Horrendous.
Really, it was. Horrendous. I think we forget how terrible it was for all of us, actually. It was pretty bad. So there you are. You've given up your job and you've thought, right, let me go off and change the world. Mm-hmm. I've been an entrepreneur for like 17 years. So I'm laughing because I know I really feel for you. So then what happens?
So I started building up the company.
What is your great idea?
Very important. My great idea was to transform the way in which we support women in the workplace. That's where the whole company began. And I wanted to tackle maternity.
Yeah.
Now, maternity, obviously, I've had 3 children, 3 different maternity leaves, 3 different line managers.
Oh, my God. Imagine that, guys. Imagine getting paid to go home and look after your baby. As an entrepreneur, that does not happen to you. Or an American.
Yes. And I knew, of course, also as an HR leader, how shocking this can be when the line manager is a huge determinant factor in the success of that woman's maternity leave.
Really?
And there's a lot of fear. And this is, to be honest, the world over this happens. There are some markets that are better than others, but there's a bizarre fear around leaders of, oh, what can I say? What can I do? And they go, oh, congratulations, you're pregnant. And then there's this fear of, can I contact them? What questions can I ask? Can I ask them to...
How long will they be out? Yeah. What will happen?
Exactly. And there's this huge fear which drives silence. So people are so frightened of doing it wrong, they say nothing.
This is what happens when people die as well. Yeah. And when bad calamities happen, people get afraid to say something wrong, so they say nothing.
Yeah. And it's really problematic. And I wanted to tackle this. So I built a tech platform. Well, not me. That sounds
like in my spare time.
I casually built them. I mean, I can barely use my mobile phone on a good day. But I went out to the market, got this brilliant business to build my tech. And we have a full wraparound tech solution from the moment you find out you're pregnant, all the way through being at work when pregnant, on mat leave, preparing to come back, being back at work.
So when you say you have a full tech solution, the manager gets to know what to do when.
So we guide the manager. We have trigger alerts and email reminders to contact that person when they're off based on the expecting parent's preferences. And then we work with over 100 associates in our tech platform now. And we cover also now menopause, fertility and health, including mental health. And those partners produce content which have, if we're focusing on maternity in this conversation, their support on hypnobirthing, nutrition, baby sleep score, choosing the right childcare. So all these
helpful things. So it's gone into depth.
Yeah. So you can really help those women through that journey or those expecting families. Really important now because things have shifted so much more in the DEI space that we talk about expecting families.
So that is important. Let's just go on a quick break and then we'll be back. We'll have a conversation about, I'm trying to understand who your client is. So we'll do that when we come back.
Okay.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we're back. Who is your client? Is it the expecting family or is it the manager or is it the organization?
The organization. So we are a B2B2C platform. So our client is the company. So we sell into typically SMEs is where most of our client base sits. The company buys in to subscribe to our tech platform. And when the company have subscribed, employees get access in literally 30 seconds. It's so easy. And they are straight into accessing all of this resource on maternity, menopause, fertility, and health. And so the company is paying for this as a benefit to the employees to have that help when they need it on demand 24 hours a day.
So let me take you back to the why of this. Mm. One of the things that I found in my research is that when organizations support their employees through difficult periods, which is otherwise known as life, they gain a lot more loyalty. Is correct. That right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is one of the biggies. And you know, I very much come at this as a commercial HR leader where I want to also be able to sit with the CFO and say, this is why we're investing in this, because it does deliver ROI. What I mean by that is you churning your talent, so turning over your employees, cost 1.5 to 2 times a person's salary. So you've got somebody on 30 grand a year, you've just churned 45K. That's a loss you've made of churning and turning over that talent. It is so worth
on top of the salary of the person.
Yeah. So it's worth you truly investing in looking after and valuing your people. Add to that, we now have 5 generations in the workplace. And people require different things at different stages and different challenges, as you say, life. And so how we invest in that to engage our talent, keep our talent, grow our talent as a business is really worthwhile for you to get your return and your commitment. Happier, more engaged employees who feel well and in their best self perform better. They're more productive. They're more engaged. They want to stay. They go above and beyond.
So why do I not just fire someone who's pregnant and hire someone else?
It's like awful words to say to me.
I know, but I want to know, because honestly, that's what you hear from businesses, right? It's painful, it's expensive. I mean, there's a place I was speaking to an American CEO, and I swear to God, I did not understand that in America, because we're European based here, British and European, I did not understand that there's no maternity leave as standard. And I didn't understand that there's, they only get 2 weeks holiday a year. I was so, listen to me, I was so traumatized. I was like, what? And so why do we not just fire them and hire someone else?
Because you have that talent, that woman, that person, that expecting family member.
It has to be a woman.
Yeah, no, it has to be a woman. But you also have, you know, where you have, let's say, a same-sex couple of 2 men, that man will take time out of the business to look after that baby. So you are in a scenario where you have an employee who's learned the business, knows the culture, is working really well, is knowledgeable, has a font of knowledge that they are bringing to that role every day. They are part of the dynamic of that team. For you to lose that and then have to retrain somebody else and bring somebody else in, that is a cost to your business. And the impact is much greater than we imagine. You might find another team member has to train somebody else or take time recruiting. Now that person is away from their job and doing what they need to do. And at the end of the day, when you form these teams that work really well together, you want to do everything in your power to value that talent, to have them belong and remain in your business.
As opposed to just thinking of employees as disposable people that can come and
go. Absolutely.
Go.
They're not disposable people. And I think, you know, we need to recognize that having a baby is something that impacts. Yes, we talk about men being out to look after babies, but fundamentally, only a woman can carry a baby. And so women are being penalized for the time they're being taken out, which is impacting their careers. You know, we know there are more women that graduate from university. And as we go up the triangle to the top of the company, there are less and less women up here. And maternity, menopause are key stages in which we're losing this talent. And unless we hang on to women, we're never going to close the gender pay gap. We're never going to get to a point where we have equity and safety for women in the workplace. And it could take over 200 years to close that gender pay gap. We have a long way to go.
I'm trying to work out why an organization cares.
Why they care?
Yeah.
Because
why should, because I understand what you're offering, and I'm sorry that the conversation's gone down this road, but didn't you guys always want to know? I've always wanted to ask this conversation, have this conversation, because I know with small businesses, when we have people on maternity leave and stuff, it's absolutely painful because you can't replace them, right? So my head of marketing has just gone, and she went through IVF in the beginning, and it took, you know, and she had a failed IVF and then fine. And then she had a beautiful baby, which was born towards the end of last year. Gorgeous girl. But that process, and then her being 6 months on maternity leave, 5 months, just felt like 60 years. Was an incredibly painful exercise for us because we couldn't replace her. I didn't want to replace her, to be fair. But if you're a big, faceless, nameless organization, you know, why should they do what you're offering?
Because to value your talent, as we talked about, saves your company money if you're going to have the CFO view. Also, this is about compassion and empathy and valuing people and kindness and really noticing and paying attention to and showing appreciation for what that person has done for your business. And for them to be pregnant and then out of the business and for you to in some way vilify them or treat them as disposable, to me, is really shocking, really shocking. And it creates huge damage and of lack of safety in the organization, not just for that employee, but for everybody around them.
I was thinking that if your colleagues see you being treated badly, then what they're going to do is wait for it to happen to them. So there's going to be no morale. And we know that organizations that have a unified story and a unified approach that and purpose, what it does is it makes that business grow faster because people kind of row together in the same direction, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And every employee is your walking NPS score. You know, you are employing PR people daily in your company. And when that employee is sat in a restaurant or at a party or in the pub, and they're saying, you know what, I love working for this business. They're so amazing. You are going to have so much more engagement and attraction to that business. And if you're a consumer business, that translates into the customer 100%. Walking into the shop. So having your employees feel safe, you know, you might hear this term psychological safety in the workplace. Having a psychologically safe workplace is nirvana when it comes to driving a really strong employee culture where your employees go the extra mile for you.
We're going to go on a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about this employee engagement and what it means. So we'll just go on a quick break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. I was looking at, was it Red Mill Flour? Bob's Red Mill Flour. Mm-hmm. It's got the words Bob, Red and Mill in it somewhere. It could be Bob Red's Mills. It could be, you know. But he died. I buy their products all the time. He died yesterday or today. And when he died, he had left all his business to his 700 employees.
Wow.
Which I just think is the most amazing thing. And then I'll counteract that with listening to, who was I listening to? I was listening to the guy on The Daily Show. And he was saying that Walmart employees don't share in any of the profits of Walmart. And what they do is they get food stamps from the government. And he was saying that actually what is happening is that they're Walmart's has been subsidized by everyone's taxes. So that's why they pay so badly and they don't care. So companies do grow despite treating their staff really badly.
They do. But you are having a hit on your profits because you are churning talent and fundamentally creating a bad feeling in that business.
And also, if you go and spend 8 hours a day at work, do you not want to be in a place where that is lovely and to the best of your ability, somewhere that you can enjoy going to work or somewhere you hate?
And in 9 times out of 10, the biggest cost to your business is your team. So, of course, we need to invest really well. I mean, there are businesses like Patagonia who are renowned for doing this really well.
Oh, really? Like how?
So, and there's a brilliant book called Let My People Go Surfing, which everybody should read.
Oh, I love that. And I'm going to buy that.
It's brilliant. If you want to learn about employee culture, Patagonia really set the scene. And what they, of course, Patagonia as a brand, all about really valuing the planet, the way their products are made. They've got really stringent rules about product manufacturing, and they're really giving back to the community. And they've translated that through into their EVP, so their employee value proposition. So you eat and breathe the brand culture and values in the business. And through that, things like let your people go surfing. If they want to take off because the waves are good at 2 o'clock on a Wednesday, knock yourself out, go do that. If there's an important meeting in, you need to be responsible enough as an employee to say, this isn't the afternoon for it. We've got a big project.
Well, you've
got to
care about what you're doing because you have deliverables.
Yeah, but it's about trust. You know, they put nurseries on site in certain offices they have so that parents could get access to their babies, and US thing even more so with a short maternity, where if you're pumping or feeding, you can nip downstairs to the nursery in the office building and feed your child. And what they did is they put all these initiatives in place so that this sense of belonging and community exists within Patagonia. And their staff turnover is so low as a result. They've done an incredible job that you feel like you belong, even though that's a big company, to a broad global family.
I love that. Isn't that all you'd ever want? My thing behind it is that I've always thought, I remember when I first started my first business and started to grow it, I didn't think people were working unless they were sitting in front of me. And it's really hard not to think that. I came out of corporate law culture. And I thought, if you're sitting in front of me, you're working. If you're not sitting in front of me, I don't trust you that you are working. Sure. And that rationale is terrible, because that rationale is behind this whole work from home concept.
Sure. And COVID
stopping the work from home concept.
Yeah, but you know what? This for me is a silver lining of COVID. So companies that said we can never have people working from home, it's never going to work, all of a sudden they had no choice. And guess what? Those businesses are still here. They're still existing. They're still thriving, and they've had a big rethink. And so this possibility of flexibility, which allows us to do life and work and blend it.
But they're dialing it back, mm-hmm. right? They're dialing it back at the speed of a Ferrari. There was a judgment 3-4 weeks ago with an employee that came out with the top of her performance metrics. Mm-hmm. And she said, can I work from home? And they said, no, as an organization. So she took them to the employment tribunal and she said to them, look, I want to work from home. And the judge came back and said that she was not allowed to claim work from home as a privilege or a right, because what was said around the water cooler added greatly to the way that her work was done.
I mean, the choice of words.
Terrible.
Not great. But I actually believe that in-person days are essential.
And they just don't have to be 5 out of 5.
No, it just doesn't have to be 5 out of 5. And you're seeing now there's some companies who have got rid of their offices entirely. And what they have is they have connection days or team days where once a month or twice a month, they bring everybody together and they just take a space in that time. Because you think about the cost of renting an office,
yeah,
that's a great way of doing it. But these human connection days are critical so you can have cross-functionality and sharing of knowledge, because otherwise, let's take the IT team. The IT team spend their whole week working together as the IT team, but they never talk to the marketing team. So how do we bring that together so we avoid silo working, which in itself is damaging for the growth of an organization?
Is it?
Silo working is dangerous. Silo working for me, you know, and there's research done about this, that the cross-pollination and the creativity of diversity of thought helps us really bring out creative solutions and creative ideas to help a business grow. And where you can imagine, let's take that exact scenario, the IT team are just delivering what they're told to deliver, but they may not know about this brand new project over here that they can have probably some early input.
It's hard for you to know that it even matters what you've done when you're just doing that thing.
Yeah. So there's a particular business that we work with that do these connection days where each division, and they spend the morning and they all stand up and present on what they're doing. So the team get up and say, we're working on this. And it's their way of sharing and webbing in where they can have cross connection. You know, and then the finance guy might say, hold on, we've got budget here, we can use for this or that. But that conversation would never have happened on the weekly marketing call, for example.
No, because there's also a place where there's a deep level of discomfort, right? Having to speak up on Zoom when there's 24 people there and you're the most junior, but actually you could be helpful. There are statistics that show that when you have diversity of thought, innovation goes straight through the roof, that it does create, because you've got other people's opinions coming in.
Which brings us nicely into DEI, which you know I'm going to bring up today. On how it's so important that we have inclusive cultures and diverse teams. You know, we naturally tend to gravitate towards and recruit people like us.
We do, yeah.
We all have bias. Everybody has it. And if you tell me you don't, call me up, we'll talk, and I'll tell you you do. And so being able to recruit outside of our normal bias or our lens in which we recruit people like us is so powerful. I always say, actually, if you are interviewing somebody and they challenge you and make you feel uncomfortable, that's the person to hire, not the one that doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. But you run like hell.
Yeah.
You don't want to work with someone who's going to make you uncomfortable.
But people tend to go, no, I'm going to recruit this person because they were really nice and we got on really well in the interview. Ah, who's going to stretch you, grow you, drive your team, drive your business? Let's really expand. And diverse teams are so powerful for business.
It's very true. But the problem I have a lot with DEI is that, and especially with the conversations that I'm having nowadays around DEI, which I've never, ever, ever had before, is I'm asking people that I meet that work in organizations, that work in corporates, and I'm asking you, if you're listening and you work in a corporate, what is your business's DEI policy? Do you know what it is? Because I promise you that I have 100 out of 100 hit rate on this that nobody knows. They don't know when they're running a company for 1.4 billion. They don't know when they're running a company that turns over 210,000 and all the way in between. And that's my issue with it, is that if we don't know what the policy is, how do we help the organization take advantage of it?
I know. It pains me because I work with companies, you know, around their DEI strategy. And it is really important you communicate that to your teams, and not just once.
No, regularly.
Regularly. And there's, you know, you need a cadence, and a cadence that's really known by the business. So let's say the first Monday of every month, we have a town hall. There's always a 15-minute slot where we update on initiatives, feedback from ERG, employee representative groups, ERGs. And so you have a cadence which allows your employees to know the steps you're taking to drive your DEI strategy. But at least monthly, there has to be regular communication.
I think that the difference in listening to what you've just said is that you're talking about work being a community.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I have to say categorically, there was never a place in my corporate life where I felt that anywhere that I was a community. Because my definition of a community is somewhere that supports you, that helps you, that makes you feel part of what you're doing. And I did a thing on TV about perimenopause. And I came out of there and I posted up on social media. And in the chat, I remember women coming up going, oh, my workplace is like this. My boss is like this. And I was like, yay, because it was the most wonderful experience. And I think that if we're going to do this, the evolution to a community has got to be how we look at workplaces.
Absolutely, it does. And also back to this point of multi-generational workplaces. You know, by 2025, 75% of the workplace will be millennials, and they expect this. Expect this. And, you know, I remember, well, I came out of my corporate world 3.5 years ago. So let's say 5 years ago, I remember sitting in an interview, interviewing a millennial for this job. And this girl turned to me at the end. I said, have you got any questions? She said, yes. Tell me about the culture of well-being and inclusion here. What do you do to help us, you know, as employees feel valued? And I was like, this is the best question. And I'd never been asked it. So it was my real trigger moment as an HR leader that things are changing.
Yeah.
And unless you as a company can demonstrate your value to your talent in that way and rethink what well-being means in your community, in your company, those people aren't going to be attracted to your business.
No, they're not. And it used to feel like it was something ridiculous, right? Like we don't do that. We go to work. We don't. Yes. So the way that the evolution of working, I think that that transformation has been a massive part of
hugely.
This,
right? But then also back to this five generations point. So that millennial might ask the, you know, the older generations in an interview that same question. And if you're probably in your 60s, you know, heading to retirement, your employee journey has been turn up, show up, do as you're told,
turn up, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Your response to that question, maybe you might feel incredibly triggered, actually, of just, for God's sake, just get to work and do your bloody job.
Yeah, aren't I paying you? Isn't that enough?
Exactly. And so this constant evolvement and communication between the different levels in the workplace is something that requires ongoing work, and it's going to take time. It really is.
Yeah. Thank you. That was super helpful. How do people find you?
You can find me at, so my company is weareludo.com. So we are Ludo. You can email me at elizabeth@weareludo.com. Elizabeth with a Z. I worked for a French company and they spell it with an S in France.
Yeah.
I spent my life going with a Z.
Also,
with a Z.
Very quickly, what does Ludo mean?
So Ludo, you know the game, right?
Yeah, I love Ludo.
Yeah, apparently it's called Parcheesi in the US.
Oh, is that what Parcheesi is?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
I know, because I've got a US client and they said, Ludo. And then I showed them the picture of the board and they went, Parcheesi. Oh, yeah. That. So four, you think about the game of Ludo, right? Four different color quadrants. Each one of those quadrants has four players that must make a journey around the whole board, and all the four players need to get to the middle to win. And every single team is on that journey. So I think the hero's journey around the board, all coming together to win in the middle. And if anybody lands on your square, you have to go back to your original box where you began. A setback. And I just thought, that's a metaphor for a company. Think different departments, different teams, all trying to win, setbacks, all going after the same goal. But there are setbacks and challenges. You've got to work together. That's why.
Love it.
Yeah.
Work is a game. Life is a game.
Exactly.
And hopefully it makes it more enjoyable.
Thanks. Totally. I want to add in just quickly, because you know me, I've always got one last thing to say. I've just set up something called the Ludo Collective. And it is an online community for HR, DEI and wellbeing leaders to come together, where we have webinars, forums, discussions, office hours, wellbeing tips. So if you go to theludocollective.com, you can see about that too.
And that's the cat down there. That's what I was just doing there, as you know. So thank you very much for joining me this week. My name is Geeta Sidhu Rob. This is Activate Yourself. And I hope some part of this was interesting and inspiring and not triggering exactly, but sparking something in you that makes you want to think more about this and understand it better, so that you can have conversations that you couldn't have before you listen to this episode. That would be amazing. So thank you. And we will be together again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.